This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Sharit Abdullah and Wang Xiaoning. It is 7.07 in the morning, Thursday the 12th of September. And in the US overnight, stocks rallied. The Dow closed up 0.9%, the S&P 500 was up 0.7%, and the Nasdaq was up 1.1% to the highest level since July. Crude oil also plunged on the back of US President Donald Trump, indicating that sanctions on Iran may be eased.
Yeah, that's right. And Asia is following suit everywhere. Up, where except for South Korea, closed down at 0.8. So Nikkei 1%, Shanghai up 0.4%, Hang Seng close to 2%, Singapore 1.6%, and KLCI marginally 0.4%.
So on the line to give us more insight into global markets this morning, we have Stephen Innes, Asia-Pacific market strategist at Axie Trader. Thank you for joining us, Stephen. Now, China has signaled that it could be taking steps to relieve the negative effects of the trade war with the U.S. What kind of easing measures do you think we'll see?
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, there's a lot of positive alchemy at work in the markets these days. You know, we know that we've got the central bank easing to backstop equity markets, but now Beijing is extending a modest olive branch to President Trump yesterday, trying to de-escalate the trade tensions. In short, they're pulling back some of the tariffs that they placed on the U.S. products, or they fell short of including the key tariff on soybean and other agricultural products. However, we do think this is going to be part of the October negotiation. And the way we're viewing this, the president will be more than happy not to apply more tariffs if the Chinese commit to buying more agricultural products. Now, this is not going to trigger a full deal, but it's the sort of thing that could be agreed to in exchange where both parties save faces and everybody's pretty happy. So this will keep the market, in my view, at a pretty decent state of trade war neutrality, which I think the markets will be quite happy to go through into the holiday season, because the last thing investors want is another lump of coal similar to what they had in their holiday stocking last year.
And Stephen, we've seen some reports that say it's time to look at China stocks again. What's your take on this? Is it the end of the risk of investor sentiment?
You know, I wish I saw that report a month ago before the markets went up 9%, but it's just been huge demand from foreigners. That's where it's all coming from. We know that local activity is quite insatiable on the retail sector in China. However, a lot of this demands from offshore. I think it's a combination of getting listed on the MSCI, their broader appeal from greater investors. However, I think we're looking at two key things here. Beijing's commitment to prop up the economy is resoundingly resilient in the sense that they've got a huge war chest that they can put into action, not only monetary policy, but fiscal policy. This has seen historically, they're willing to just plow into the infrastructure building. So this is pretty positive. I think this is why we're seeing a lot of activity start to come into the China markets. Never too late. Market still has a long way to go, especially if we can reach this possibility of a trade war detente and even a full fledged agreement between U.S. and China at some point. However, I wouldn't be holding my breath for that one. I think there's still a long way to go before we get to that level.
All right, Stephen. And over in Europe, the ECB is kicking off a two-day meeting, and they're expected to dive even deeper into negative rates. Do you agree with this assessment of the ECB's position?
Well, you know, they really can fall back on the inflation more than anything else. I'm of the opinion that diving deeper into negative territory will do a little more than what happened in Japan. And we're going to see the Japanization of policy in terms of what happened in Japan over in Europe. I don't think it's going to be very effective. It's stirring the anemic growth. I think we'll need some type of fiscal response, if not some budgetary response, to get them out of this mess. I mean, how are investors going to react when rates are at zero and you move them down a little bit into negative? Is that, I mean, how much more can you go? So I don't really agree with this. Plus, I think they're treading on fairly dangerous water here because the, depending on how aggressive they go, that is, because we know that the U.S. are very, very anti-competitive devaluation of currency markets. And we know ECB historically has leaned on the euro to do much of the heavy lifting for the economy, because given the fact there's such an enormous export center, especially Germany. So we're going to keep an eye on this. I'm of the opinion that global central banks are actually looking to walk back from the cliff edge of this rate cut mania that sort of hit its apex back when the RBNZ dropped 50 basis points. And I see the central banks trying to keep their so-called powder dry for rainier days. I think the economy is, the economic data is somewhat based towards the downside here. So it's not exactly completely, you know, rolling over here. So I'm really curious to see what the ECB is going to come out with. Right now, I'm sort of a bit confused. I was very much in line suggesting they're not going to be aggressive. But look at the reaction of the euro overnight. Well, there seems to be an element of the market that's shifting, thinking that they're going to be aggressive. So I think it's going to be an interesting result later today.
All right, Stephen. And also, I'd like your outlook on oil prices, particularly given that there have been a number of oil-related news this morning and over the last 2 days. National Security Advisor and Iran hawk John Bolton, he's no longer in the White House. We've had the latest announcement about sanctions from Donald Trump, coupled with the fact that the U.S. Energy Information Administration has just lowered its outlook for oil consumption to the lowest growth levels since 2011. So what is your outlook on oil?
Well, you know, obviously the short-term outlook here with Trump making these positive overtones to Iran is lower, without question. Because that'll add another, I'll give you approximately 500,000 to 700,000 reasons not to own oil, specifically the number of barrels that will be coming back onto the market. And especially when you factor in waning demand, global demand, it's quite negative. So really, the big elephant in the room here is trade. Trade doesn't get sorted out. I think oil continues to slide to the downside, despite some bullish data that we saw overnight from the inventory. Now, there's another sort of tinfoil hat outlook here amongst all the theories that go into oil markets is that oil, gasoline prices have a tendency to move lower when we move into an election. We've got the U.S. election happening in 2020. We think Donald Trump, in my opinion, is Donald Trump wants gasoline prices lower. He wants to win over some voters here. So I wouldn't be surprised if he does drop the sanctions in Iran for no other reason than to push gasoline prices lower, you know, appeal to his constituents. So this is something we're going to be monitoring very closely over the next few months.
Thank you so much, Stephen. And that was Stephen Innes of Axie Trader giving us his take on oil, which he sees sliding to the downside for now, as well as his thoughts on the ECB, which is kicking off its two-day meeting today. So that's going to be a very interesting result to look out for.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the things that he did highlight is that central banks seem to be slowing down their rate cuts. Mm. They're walking away from the cliff, like he says, right?
Yes, and they want to avoid what a Japanization.
Yeah, that's a new word, isn't it, in today's world? I love that word. It means so much because it's true. If you cut rates to zero or less than zero, after a while, the effectiveness just goes away and then you end up with actually no dry powder for that really rainy day.
Yeah. Well, Donald Trump is going to disagree with you, Xiaoning. He is already calling for the Fed to bring it down all the way to zero.
Well, he's always said that from day one, right?
He is quite the character. But also taking a look at some international headlines this morning, the Hong Kong Stock Exchange made an offer to the tune of $36.6 billion to buy the London Stock Exchange. Now, HKEX is up 0.3%, while the LSE is up 6%, though it did jump as much as 16% immediately after the news before trimming some losses. And apparently, the offer took LSE leadership off guard because it had its sights set on its own deal with Refinitiv.
Yeah, so their ambitions to transform itself into, you know, from an exchange into a data business by acquiring Refinitiv. And this purchase is still pending shareholders' approval. So Hong Kong Exchange said that it hopes to combine the most significant financial centres in Asia and as well as Europe. So it argues that LSE could monetize the market data in China and help London connect to China's fastest growing domestic capital market.
Yes, on the other hand, the top 10 shareholder of the London Exchange says that the Hong Kong Exchange is trying to diversify away from China exposure. And the London Stock Exchange also criticised the offer from Hong Kong as just preliminary preliminary and highly conditional.
Yeah, but would the merger make sense at the moment? Because if you think about it, right now, both Hong Kong and the UK are mired in political uncertainty because there's no end in sight for the Hong Kong protests, and the UK is hurtling towards a crash out of the European Union. So would this merger at this point in time actually make any financial sense?
Well, you have to think about exchanges not so much as government institutions, mm-hmm. because these are all just listed already, mm. right? So you're talking about essentially companies which are trying to grow market share to be world leaders.
Yeah.
So, you know, mergers and acquisitions in exchanges are new at all. I mean, in the past, there have been overtures. For example, Singapore Exchange did actually try to bid for Australia's stock exchange. That failed in 2011. Just 2 years ago, actually, there was an attempted merger between the London Stock Exchange and the Deutsche Börse. So everybody is just looking at profit, growing market share. It's the norm in any industry, be it whether it's a stock exchange or a bank or even just a consumer company.
But how much would political uncertainty have to bear on a deal
like
this, though?
In fact, because it's politically uncertain, you want this M&A. Mm. You're talking about interest rates being so low, right? So it just fuels M&A activity immensely because organic growth is hard to come by. So you're talking about inorganic growth now.
So these are two very prominent financial sort of, they both are located in both very prominent financial institution area. So this is not the first time, at least for LSE, right? I mean, back in 2007, London Stock Exchange bought Borsa Italiana, and in 2000, Euronext was founded by a merger of exchange in Amsterdam and Paris.
Who knows, maybe in a couple of years' time, Bursa Malaysia may merge with the Singapore Exchange, although I think that would probably give rise to quite a lot of nationalist sentiment, but one never knows.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.